I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan on me. Please have snow and mistletoe.
Welcome to show two of Integral Life's teleseminar, Love Not War, Going Home for the Holidays. I'm David Reardon, and I'm your host tonight as we dive into the second show in our five-part Home for the Holidays series. Well, Thanksgiving has come and gone, and we hope that you shared it with friends and family, and that you might have noticed some of the things that we illuminated during last week's show about relating with your loved ones. Tonight, we are going to hear the offer that Integral Coach Susan Hodges has prepared for the client of the Home for the Holidays teleseminar, Hui Lam. Welcome, Hui.
Hi, David. It's great to be here, and a warm welcome to all of our listeners as well.
And Susan, welcome to you as well.
Hi, David. Hi, everyone.
So, Hui, tonight is a big night. You've had some time to reflect on all you and Susan explored during show one. Any initial thoughts or feelings you want to share with us that came up for you since the intake session that we covered in last week?
Sure. Yeah, after the intake and the skillful questions that Susan asked me during that session, afterward, a few things definitely lingered for me and was on my mind. The first was really this contrast that I hold between the way that I'm able to relate with my friends and colleagues and how that's different to the way that I am able to often relate with my family. And based on some of the questions that Susan asked, I started really thinking more deeply about what are some of the assumptions and expectations that I may hold in terms of what it means to connect more intimately, and how might these expectations actually be preventing me from connecting with my family in a way that would, or, you know, relating and showing up with my family in a way that would actually facilitate those types of deeper connections. So that was interesting to me. And the other thread that was also stayed with me was this piece around my somewhat, even now as I speak about it, it can be challenging to say the fact that, acknowledge the fact that perhaps I'm afraid to take the risk of exposing myself and sharing more with my family, and how I'm actually often holding back at the risk of not being seen and accepted. And so that has also been something that's really been percolating for me.
Thanks for that, Hui. We're definitely going to dive into that deeper tonight for sure. So let me turn to you now, Susan. And, you know, I sense that the time between the initial intake session and the offer that we're going to explore tonight, it's a time of deep reflection as you shape all that we have shared with you about his Home for the Holidays topic into the two metaphors that you're actually going to offer him. Is there anything that you'd like to say to Hui before we get started tonight?
Sure. Hi, Hui.
Hey, Susan.
Hi. I just want to say publicly that it really was an honor to deeply hold you with your family in mind as I prepare this offer, and I hope it serves you well.
Thank you. And it's been a great learning opportunity for me as well already, and I'm looking forward to diving into this with you now, and my hope is that it's also a service to all of our listeners as well.
Well, thanks to both of you. And before we start exploring the offer, I need to do a little housekeeping before we review some of the comments and questions that the audience has actually sent in during the last week. So if any of you on the call tonight or those that have downloaded show two have not yet listened to show one, you can download the recording of that show on the Home for the Holidays event webpage. To access show one recording, go to the www.integrallife.com and click on the Home for the Holidays medallion on the left-hand side of the homepage, and then follow the links to the show one archive. You'll also find the practice that was suggested for all of you to reflect on during the week between last week's show and this one. Also, as most of you know, I think, we are offering three integral coaching sessions to one lucky and very deserving winner of our Home for the Holidays contest. To enter the contest, you need to submit your own personal family story this week, and we're going to pick three of them to review during show four, which takes place on December 15th. Just a reminder, these stories have to be your personal version of the challenges that we face with our families during the holidays. So whatever that personal version is for you, that as we are exploring it with his personal one, but not that one, yours. After listening to three stories, the audience and the Integral Life staff will then vote and select one as the winner. These three coaching sessions have a $500 value, so boy, I'd send in your story for consideration by the end of this week, and you could win this very valuable prize. All right, let's get started. First, I want everyone in the audience to just take a breath and quiet your mind just for a moment and reflect on the practice themes that we wanted you to consider during this last week. What are some of the patterns and themes that you notice about the way that you have interacted with your family members in the past? How are these interactions different from interactions you have with friends and colleagues? How would you like your interaction with each family member during this holiday season to be? And what initial resistance arises as you consider interacting with your family members in this way? And also take note of what form does this resistance actually take? You know, these themes have really seemed to resonate with all of you in the audience this week. We've picked two emails we thought were the most stimulating, and I'm going to read them and ask Wee and Susan to reflect on them. The first one is from Justin, and Wee, I think this is for you, so we'll start with you. He says, in listening to Teleseminar 1, I guess the first show, I hear the word energetic used a lot. Can you go into that term a bit more in the context of your topic and how it relates to others, or how you relate to others? Is this related to the subtle body in the way that you light up around your friends but not around your family? What do you think about that, Wee?
Well, that's a great question. Thanks, Justin, for sending that in. Yeah, so the way I describe my topic to Susan and how this going home for the holidays is something that I'm want to work with in terms of relating more fully with my family, I was able to describe that through the contrast of how I relate to my friends and my colleagues. And the thing that's most palpable for me is that when I use the word energetic connection, I actually feel like a palpable feeling in my body of like being awake and alert at the same time. So being alert and awake and being very much pulled outward. And so there's this feeling of being kind of inspired, being engaged, and being fully present. And that's the energetic term that I use, that it kind of feels very alive in my body. And when I often am able to feel that with my friends and my wife and others that I'm work with, that often is missing when I'm home with my family. And so that is part of the topic is, well, why is that the case? You know, I have so much that I relate to and share with my family in many ways, and certainly a long history, and I love them. And why is that palpable feeling of aliveness and engagement, why is that not there? And so that, for me, was a really specific way of describing this topic as I shared it with Susan, my coach.
Mm-hmm. And Susan, do you have any other thoughts about Justin's question?
Yeah, Justin, this is a good question, because what you're seeing is that Hui really orients to something somatic rather than cognitive. He's not orienting simply from a thinking way or a feeling way. He really resonates by energy. Do I have energy? Do I not have energy? Do I feel alive? Do I feel dull? And for me as his coach, I don't orient that way. I really move from a place of emotion and feeling, and I connect that way. So it really asks of me to drop more deeply into my body and to try to experience things on the energetic level that he's describing so that I can really meet him in the coaching process.
Mm-hmm. Great. All right, so here's the second one. This one's from Josh, and Josh writes, I'm struck by Wee's need to be understood and relate to his family at a level that does not seem to be present in their experience. I hear we seeking to change others so that he can be more authentic. Accepting your family for who they are, and especially where they are in their development, is vastly easier than trying to change them. So my question is forgiveness difficult for you on a level where the love and respect you crave from your family may never come in terms that you desire? Wee, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, that was actually a really interesting question for me.
Mm-hmm.
The first piece of it was around seeking to change others, and you know, I'll defer to my coach afterwards, but from my perspective, I wasn't aware of my thinking about it that way. I did talk about, for instance, that my mother doesn't see me for who I am, but the next step that I took in terms of how I approach that is that I acknowledge, well, she doesn't see me because I haven't been able to share with her who I really am now. And in terms of my topic, the way that I'm approaching it is, okay, how can I show up differently? And although I would, of course, love for my family to automatically get me and be able to see things the way I see things, I know that the opportunity really is for me to practice, and how do I practice showing up more fully, and how do I practice understanding them where they're at in a way that allows me to access their worlds more fully as well. In terms of the forgiveness question, to tell you the truth, I never thought about it that way, and it's something that I'll have to think about more. I'm actually curious from Susan, my coach's perspective, if she thinks that this is a part of the topic, because I have not seen it as a part of it. So, Susan, what do you think?
Yeah, and again, I think this is a fabulous question. We're really tapping into Josh's way of viewing the world, which is very different than Hui's. And so some things aren't in Hui's radar. They're not on his horizon, and we're helping to develop that. So, for example, Hui is really checking in internally with himself, his place. And so the big developmental step then is to start going into other people's perspectives. Not that he never thinks about other people's perspectives, but with his family, that's difficult. I mean, I also just want to say that we don't know yet if what's going to happen when he goes home. For him to even be able to start speaking up more and just becoming more involved will be a change. And maybe he'll deem that's enough. We don't know. But change is always possible. And change is always happening. And the beauty of the coaching process then is to just remain compassionate and curious, always holding forgiveness, but being compassionate and curious, because we don't have control over everything. And it's a constant state of learning.
Thanks for that, Susan. And those are great answers. And I'm sure that Justin and Josh were happy that you guys actually got to comment on that. And to all of you in the audience, thanks for all the questions and feedback you shared with us during the past week. Keep those questions coming in. And as we explore what Susan is going to offer we tonight, we want you to, again, hold your own personal story about your family and listen for things in we's story that may relate to your own relationships. I certainly found in listening to the recording of Susan's offer that we are going to hear parts of tonight, that there was lots of relevance to the way I want my own relationships with my family during the holiday season to go. So as we've said from the beginning, the Home for the Holidays theme is the classic family story that we can all relate to. So Susan, tonight's the night where you make we an offer that includes two metaphors. And so I want to listen to this first pre-recorded clip where you begin the session. And just as a reminder to the audience, as we're listening to these pre-recorded clips from the actual offer session between Susan and we, I just want you to remember that for the sake of time, we've tightly edited their actual conversation to give you an idea of what it actually sounds like. In the coaching session that they actually do, the pace of the interchange is much more leisurely, and it allows for a lot more time for we and Susan to reflect on what is emerging and being co-created between the two of them. So with that in mind, here is the first pre-recorded clip for tonight. It's the opening to the actual offer session between Hui and Susan.
Good morning, Hui.
Good morning, Susan.
This is our offer conversation, and as you know, the purpose of the offer conversation is to talk about your topic and why it's important to you, and then offer you a couple of different metaphors, the first of which I hope captures what it's like for you to experience trying to tackle that topic with who you are right now, how you're perceiving it and how you're trying to resolve it. And we can talk about what that allows for and where you're getting stuck with it. And then I'd like to offer you another possible way of solving your concerns. And then we can talk about the developmental objectives and practices that can help you do that.
Great. That sounds good.
Did anything come up for you since the last time we talked?
Nothing in particular. Just really, I guess the only thing was thinking more about the opportunity of being with my family over the holidays and how, you know, I'm really looking forward to receiving what you come up with so that I kind of go back and feel that I have something to focus on that can really make a difference, as opposed to kind of going with the mindset of wanting things to be different, but then when I get there, realizing that things end up falling into the same patterns that they always do and kind of not knowing what to do about it, and then coming home, you know, after the holidays and feeling like, that didn't really go exactly the way I wanted.
So, Susan, can you tell us a little bit about the process that you go through as an integral coach as you prepare an offer for the client? I mean, we've heard you now do this opening and check in with but can you talk a little bit about what is your process as you get ready or as you form the offer and then you're actually going to present it to we tonight?
Sure. In addition to isolating the topic and why it deeply matters to him, what we were just hearing, I use the information that I gathered through the intake to assess Hui from two very different but essential perspectives. So one, I looked at him, in this case using a complex set of six integral lenses. However, what sets Integral Coaching Canada's method apart from the rest is that I also held Hui in light of his topic in a deeply embodied and heartfelt way so as to see as he sees, as best I can. Not just looking at Hui, but looking as Hui, again, as best I can. So in other words, my aim was to metabolize his implicit values in his topic, including how these values shape his way of relating to himself and his family, and what he looks for to confirm that his way of seeing and going is valid. Looking at and looking as he does allowed his metaphors to arise in me, along with the developmental competencies or the muscles he needs to build to be successful in his topic.
Mm-hmm.
And then lastly, I designed a draft of his first practice, and that was intended to build his capacity to notice his current way of relating to himself and his family. In the fuller conversation, since we're only showing clips here, Hui and I would co-create everything. Okay, so this conversation is called an offer because what I offer starts off the process, but then it becomes something that the client and coach shape together. You might say we both get our hands in the clay to support Hui. So the first practice is helping build a foundation of awareness. Then Hui can progress to building key developmental muscles that will support and sustain change in his topic.
So, Susan, after we confirm that your description, you know, just sums it up rather nicely, you then proceed to explore more deeply why it matters to him to take this on. In the second part of this process, you actually suggest something that I hadn't thought of as it relates to Wee's longing to connect with his family more deeply. So let's listen to that pre-recorded clip, and then I want to ask you both a question about it.
Then at some point, you long for what's possible. At some point, you know, wake up again and go, well, how did that happen? And you feel responsible because you see this, and you feel responsible for creating more intimacy with them. What I was really picking up is that you're really wanting to leave a legacy for your family at large and something that's going to impact your own children, but also your nieces and nephews.
I mean, I certainly want to be able to, like with my parents, I realize that, you know, I don't know how much longer they'll be around. You know, they're healthy now. You know, being a parent myself, I've realized that a lot of the experience of raising my children kind of made me feel a sense of, you know, kind of a deep understanding of what they must have felt and what they must have experienced in, you know, in their own ways, raising me and my siblings, and kind of feeling a renewed sense of wanting to, you know, connect with my parents in a deeper way, and, you know, wanting to not waste the opportunities I have. Like, my whole extended family lives still in California. It's the only one that's moved out. So when I come back there, you know, I kind of feel like I want to take advantage of the opportunity of being around them, to engage them fully, and to, you know, have fun together, enjoy each other's company, and also to, you know, kind of further deepen our relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. The sharing of that common experience of being a parent and a father, and finding out about their stories, can certainly build that cohesion.
So, Susan, I want to start with you. This idea of we wanting to leave a legacy for his family at large is an interesting one. Were you suggesting that whole legacy thing, that that there was something, this was something that we wasn't aware of as he worked on his topic, or was it something that you just picked up and wanted to point out to him?
That's another great question, David. During the intake, I didn't hear Hui explicitly say that he wanted to leave a legacy. So following that conversation, as I really dropped in and looked as Hui, my intuition felt this yearning, as if a new value, something developmental, is wanting to emerge through him. And it felt important to offer my hunch as a way of helping him give voice to something unspoken, if indeed it resonated, and we know now that it did.
And so, Wee, can you say a little bit more about how being a parent with your own kids now has affected the way that you want to, or has influenced, I guess, the way that you want to show up with your parents and siblings? And what is this experience of you being the parent now? How does that reflect back on to your parents and this whole issue of communicating with them?
Yeah. And, well, in addition to what I shared already in terms of having a greater appreciation for my own parents through the experience of, you know, going through what it means to be a father myself, there are a couple other things that are really, you know, being a parent and being having two kids has given me even a greater sense of urgency and motivation to show up differently with my family. And the first is that in showing up for my children, you know, I feel like I'm able to really offer them a lot of appreciation and love and you know, playfulness, and, you know, deeply engage with them. And I've been able to notice that a lot of the development and growth and practices that I've engaged in over the past, you know, several years, I'm able to offer that to my children as something that I believe is very valuable to them. And so in many ways that has inspired me to consider, well, you know, I would love to be able to offer to my children, but wouldn't it be great if I could offer some of these gifts to my parents, to my siblings, in a way that could further enrich their lives and also bring us closer together? And in addition to that, there's something else that I'm just actually thinking about now and actually noticed after the first practice that Susan gave me, which we'll go a little bit more into in the next session, but around this topic of being a parent myself, what I noticed is that even though I'm able to show up more fully with my children in many ways, some of the same challenges in my way of relating to my siblings at some of the, you know, very particularly challenging moments, they still show up with my children. Maybe not as much, but there's still a piece of it there. And so there's something there that is still kind of inherited and passed on. You know, how I'm relating to my parents still is kind of transferring through to at certain times how I relate to my children. And so I'm wanting to bring more awareness to that and to show up, you know, in a more conscious and full way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting how that juxtaposition of actually being the child and then being the parent, how you can compare those two experiences and get two different perspectives. That's great. So, Susan, the moment has come. It's time to listen to you offer the first metaphor to Hui, and we'll also get to hear Hui's initial reaction to what you've chosen for him. Can you talk briefly about what you're trying to accomplish in this first part of the offer? And then we'll actually listen to the pre-recorded exchange between the two of you.
Mm-hmm. My purpose here is to help Hui experience the underlying beliefs that govern his interactions with his family, as well as how he confirms that everything's okay, both with himself and with them. So, you know, we all do this, right? Not just Hui. We all have ways of being that are so ingrained in us that we don't even see them anymore. So it's a process of helping him experience what he includes and excludes as his way of being in his family. So I would invite you, as you listen, see if you can detect the following cycle. So Hui's way of seeing is, it's better to keep the peace than it is to assert myself. Because if I do, I risk upsetting my family and or discovering they're not really interested in learning about me. And his way of going is, so when I feel impatient, disappointed, fearful of, and angry with my family members, I tend to deny my experience by going into lazy withdrawal, even nervously laughing, and shifting my focus to what I enjoy about them. And his way of checking is everyone happy and relaxed? So just to reiterate, in the full conversation, Hui and I built all the nuances of these ways of seeing, going, and checking together versus me telling him how it is. So I start with an offer, and we go from there.
Well, with that said, let's listen to the first metaphor that you actually offer Hui.
Well, I'm excited to offer you the metaphor that I'm hoping really resonates with what it's like for you to know that you're going home soon, and how you might often feel like you're showing up there.
Okay.
And what I'd like to do is play a little tune that captures the metaphor. Then I'd like to just read you a little caption and just sit for a minute with it. And after I play this and sit with it, I'd just like for you to share your initial impression of what it feels like for you. Okay?
Okay.
So here it goes.
A little song I wrote, you might want to sing it note for note, don't worry, be happy, in every life we have some trouble, when you worry you make it double, don't worry, be happy.
Okay. So it's more of a phrase, but it's a song, and it's Don't Worry, Be Happy.
Uh-huh.
And that song is by Bobby McFerrin. So I pulled out some of the lyrics that hone in to what I'm wanting to get at. And that is, don't worry, be happy. In every life we have some trouble. When you worry, you make it double. Don't worry, be happy. Put a smile on your face. Don't bring everybody down like this. Don't worry, it will soon pass. Whatever it is, don't worry, be happy.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
How so?
Well, I think that certainly I'm very much an optimist, and I think that one of the aspects of that is that if there's things that I may have noticed, or, you know, like almost like something that's nagging at me that's like a little, you know, off or is an idea, it's easy for me to not worry about it, you know. It's very easy for me to not really focus on certain things that may not be working and just say, well, things are pretty good. You know, there's plenty to be happy about and plenty that I, you know, can feel good about, and I focus on the things that I'm worried about.
Well, how are you feeling at this moment? I mean, you shared a lot with Susan during the intake, and we hear the amusement in your initial reaction to Don't Worry, Be Happy. I guess what I'm asking is, was there anything else going on for you at this point that you didn't initially express to her?
Yeah, well, actually there was. I actually kind of went through a whole process, you know, like a pretty quick inner process as I was listening to that song. The initial laugh, amusement was, well, that's not really me, or because I thought about how Don't Worry, Be Happy is, or I looked at it as, you know, me actually saying to somebody, don't worry, just be happy. And I was thinking, no, I don't do that. You know, I wouldn't just tell one of my family members, don't worry about that, just be happy. But then when I thought about it more fully and let it sink in beyond the kind of the surface initial way of looking at it, and I interpreted more from an inner perspective, like, okay, in terms of my own interior kind of feelings, if I have a feeling in a sense of like a flow and a sense of a, you know, positive connection, that's great and that's what I'm looking for. But when I feel some discomfort, you know, there is a part of me that doesn't want to acknowledge that and goes and wants to go back to, oh, well, let's go back to something that's comfortable and flowing and very engaging. And so my amusement there was I actually went through this quick process of, oh, that's not really me. I don't see myself that way. And then my amusement was, oh, actually, I think that kind of is me. So that was a process I went through in that few minutes.
Yeah. Hey, so Susan, I just want to ask before we go on, in terms of a metaphor offer like this. Now, this particular one was a song, and it was a kick to listen to it. Do they often take form like that? I mean, it can be a lot of different things, I guess, rather than just a word. It can be a song, it can be a poem, it could be a lot of things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It can be an image, it can be a phrase, it can be a word. But the idea is to have it not be so locked in. We want it to open up the way the client is seeing, going, and checking. So we want it to be fluid. We want it to really, really hone in to that key element where the stuckness is happening.
Right. Yeah, it was great. A smile came across my face when I heard it the first time. So, Susan, you then begin to explore what Wee's first metaphor, don't worry, be happy, means in terms of the challenges he feels concerning his topic. In this next interchange between the two of you, you work with him about the pressure he feels to do things differently, how don't worry, be happy could help with his irritation when it comes up, and then Wee's claim that he doesn't really know how his family actually feels about him and the risk that he faces if he tries to find out. So let's listen to this next interchange, because this is really where you guys get to start diving into this a little more deeply.
How does the way of not worrying relate to your desiring to work on this topic? Because you said things that you feeling strongly worried about being with the family, but that you talked about this pressure. And so typically when clients come for coaching, they're feeling some kind of pressure around an issue. Where is this pressure in you coming from to relate to them in a different way?
Good question. For me, in some ways, I think the pressure is coming from, in many ways, the development that I've experienced over the past, you know, couple years, and particularly with some of the work I've done going through my own coaching program, you know, the training that we did together, in working with my own topic of opening up my heart and being able to relate more intimately with others in my life, and, you know, and I've, you know, had a great opportunity to do that with my own clients. And that feeling, that, you know, deeper, richer, fuller connection with others, as I mentioned in our intake, I then noticed the contrast, you know, and I think that's the easiest way for me to describe it, is that noticing that the contrast between these fuller and more intimate ways of connecting with people and how that's not necessarily there, certainly not there on a consistent basis with my family. And so that kind of creates that pressure, you know, feeling like, wow, there's like a missed opportunity for me, you know, and there's more that I could be giving, there's more I could be receiving, there's more I could be sharing with my family, you know, there's the family or the people that I would say, you know, unquestionably that, you know, I love my siblings, I love my parents, yet there's not this kind of more tangible connection and, you know, sharing of that love. And,
yeah,
you know, so that, I think that's kind of where the pressure comes from,
yeah,
of wanting to, you know, kind of wanting to step more fully into these relationships. Even though, you know, they're the relationships I've had my whole life, how do I step into them as kind of who I am right now?
When you go home to visit your family, what kind of mood do you want to be in? What kind of tone do you hope to have for yourself and for them?
I would hope that it would be fun and you know, kind of joyful. And like with the children, you know, there's oftentimes kind of a sense of excitement that they have, that we're able to, like, carelessly experience with them, and certainly in terms of holidays and, you know, all of the activities that go along with the holidays. Yeah, and kind of a warm, amicable mood, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what are you checking for when you're with your family to make sure that it's warm and pleasant?
I'm not really sure. I don't know, I guess it's a feeling that I sense I have, I guess.
What are you checking for to confirm to not worry and be happy, that we're happy here? There's nothing to worry about.
I guess kind of a certain energetic, or, you know, that I kind of feel.
Okay.
In them and in me, I guess.
What happens when you feel impatient or annoyed?
What happens when I feel impatient?
Mm-hmm.
I guess I kind of check out a little bit.
Okay.
Not like I'm, I don't feel like I'm as fully there, you know, I'm fully available. I'm not in a, you know, really receptive space.
Uh-huh.
I felt kind of like, okay, let's move on, you know, let's move on to what's next.
And what, where do you want to go next?
Someplace happy.
Uh-huh. Who initiates that move?
I guess it would probably be initiated, but not, you know, if I'm coming from a place that's not a very skillful initiation.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, let's talk about something else.
Uh-huh. So I'm really curious. So the family atmosphere is fairly lighthearted and happy, it seems, most of the time. And so you're saying that you're curious now that it seems lighthearted, but I really don't know how people actually feel.
Well, you were saying that my family members feel loved and appreciated by me, and I said I'm not so sure if they all feel that way or not, you know, or to what degree they feel that.
Do you know that from your family members or towards yourself?
That's what I'm saying, I'm not sure.
Uh-huh. What comes up for you when you think about finding out?
You know, just thinking, I don't know why I laugh, but just imagining like I've talked to my brother or sister and saying, do you feel loved and appreciated by me?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. What do you think that would do to the lighthearted, playful, happy tone?
I guess it might change it, potentially.
Yeah, and how does don't worry, be happy come in when things are unpleasant?
To go back to not worry about it. If when things are unpleasant, to basically don't worry about them.
Yeah, that lazy withdrawal.
Yeah, that's the don't worry part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like, don't worry about that. I'll do that later. I don't need to worry about that now.
And then what do you miss by going back to don't worry?
I think we just miss the opportunity to explore what is underneath, you know, what I might be perceiving as something that's unpleasant or, you know, impatient. I'd have to explore, you know, the connection that's available in the midst of whatever that is.
Yeah.
So, there was a lot of stuff you guys covered, you know, in that interchange, a lot of different moving parts. So I'm going to ask you both just to fill us in a little bit about how you thought the offer was going at this point. So, Susan, why don't we start with you, and then you can have the second word.
Okay. Well, I felt really good about what Hui and I discovered. We teased out the Don't Worry, Be Happy cycle together. And as we did in the intake conversation, we're hearing that Hui's first move, that first crucial move, is to check in with his own internal experience, particularly some energetic cue that disturbance is arising in him and or in his family members. So Don't Worry, Be Happy allows him to pull back and just keep things pleasant, at least from his perspective. But it also costs him an opportunity to learn more about his family and to be more authentic with them. So Hui, how do you feel about this?
Yeah, I was feeling good about it too, and also one of the things I would like to acknowledge is that with this metaphor, and I thought that it did fit, that at the same time there was just a lot of internal processing going on that I felt like, you know, one time trying to integrate everything that you were sharing with me, and then another aspect of just like kind of new questions and new insights popping up in my mind and reflecting back to, okay, when I had this last interaction with my mom, how did that happen? And so, in many ways, it feels like it opens up some new vistas in my mind in the way that I think about my family. And so it was kind of a lot of, you know, kind of rich food for thought, so to speak. And the other thing was, you know, that I started contemplating more was, okay, how is this really affecting, you know, my topic, and why, when I go home, that I'm not able to achieve the connection and intimacy I want. And so, you know, we explored that, and you know, as you were saying now, just the risk of going into something that feels unpleasant and not taking that risk is one of the big pieces that I, you know, wasn't aware of. And so that was just really, you know, one of the many illuminating points for me.
Mm-hmm.
I was, you know, very much looking forward to, you know, exploring that more fully in the practice as well, in terms of deepening this awareness of this "don't worry, be happy" metaphor and how that actually shows up in my life.
All right. Thanks to both of you for that. So at this point, Susan, you then close out the first part of the offer with the suggestion that when Wee pulls back from his family, that he and they miss the opportunity for him to inspire everyone to relate in deeper ways. And Wee, you're wondering, you know, how "don't worry, be happy" will actually show up when you try to employ it with your family. So we're only about halfway through the offer process as at this point. Susan, without revealing what it is yet, what do you consider as you choose the second metaphor to complement "don't worry, be happy," so that it actually will help we identify some steps towards developing the relationships he wants with his family?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so first, the first metaphor, "don't worry, be happy," enables him to know his current way of being in his topic, kind of in an objective sense, like, oh, there I am. No wonder things go the way they go. So in drafting the second metaphor, I want to help Hui access a novel way of perceiving and relating to himself and to his family members. So this new way of being metaphor includes and transcends those choice perspectives and moves that characterize "don't worry, be happy." So for example, the new metaphor should challenge Hui to draw upon new values and to embody new skills that do the following: initiate contact, inquire into his family member's experience, and move through fear to risk disclosing his own experience, and stay present in the face of disturbance, whether it's arising in him and or in his family members.
Right. So, Susan, you next unveil the second metaphor. And so let's listen to what it is in this next pre-recorded clip, and then we're going to listen to your initial reaction to what Susan is offering you with this second metaphor.
So Hui, one of the things that really touches me about you is your passion and your insatiable curiosity. And as I've gotten to know you and your world, it feels as though you've taken a lot of deep dives into your own development, and especially into your relationships and how you are as a father and a husband and as a brother and a son. And my sense is that you bring such integrity to any new developmental area and that you do it fully. So what I'd like to share with you as an opening is a new way of holding this topic of not really feeling known by your family. And a metaphor I'd like you to hold as a new way of heading home for the holidays this year is the deep sea diver.
Okay.
But it's not an ordinary deep sea diver. It's the deep sea diver of others' interiors.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to tell you a little bit about this deep sea diver, and then we can explore it. How does that sound?
Sounds very interesting so far.
Okay. So the yearning you feel to be impacted by others and to have an impact on them compels you to dive into the unknown. And in the unknown, you never know what you're going to find. So feeling the strength of your conviction, as well as the strength of your body, you know, your strong legs and your stamina, you brave cold waters and strong currents of emotion in order to follow something so important to you, and that's meeting people where they are. And if they're under the sea and their voices sound a little different than you're used to, because you know underwater everything sounds different, then you're willing to be with that. And of course, underwater, there's no gravity. There's no upside or downside. So you can actually move in all 360 degrees. So there are no limits. Your usual way of marking how things are going would need to change. You need to rely on other markers. But also there's currents and who's in the flow with you and who's out of the flow. So like you said, when you go home to be with your family members, they all each have their own current, their certain flow. You have your own with them. And by being there, you already disrupt that space or that current just by showing up. So then you'd need to sort out, what do I pay attention to down here in the deep sea of my family? And as you encounter each member of your family, not just the whole family, but each member of the family, and as you take on diving down to where they go, however shallow or deep they feel comfortable swimming, whichever underwater caves are of interest to them, and they get to know you by how you join into their interiors. So each encounter enables them to feel your deep sea diver capacities, and they start to trust it. In fact, they might even start to hold their breath until they get to see you again. So in each encounter, you all get to uncover what's possible, given what's real to them and alive for both of you. And so you can commune with them in this moment, in each moment, in their world, which you have now joined. So before we touch a bit more fully onto this way of relating to your family, this deep sea diver of others' interiors, I'm curious what arises for you as you hear this.
Yeah, I think a couple of themes really stand out for me. One is this diving into the unknown. And as you have mentioned when you started offering this metaphor, that I do have experience kind of diving into my own development and recognize that part of development is diving into what's not yet known. And this deep sea diver metaphor then allows me to kind of feel like, what is it to dive into the world or the kind of experience, and as you mentioned, interiors of my family.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like thinking about that each person has their own currents that they are comfortable with, or their own currents that they swim in as their own inner experience and the way that they view the world and what's important to them. And how, as and hopefully a proficient deep sea diver, that one of my skills would be to be able to recognize, well, what is this current that's here, you know, in my sister, for instance, and what, how is that different than the current that my brother is in, that, you know, that if I'm diving into that current, I can become better at it with my family, certainly. As you know, I'm a very kind of kinetically oriented person, so the diving and the current aspect gives me this kind of a feeling of, you know, there's, as a diver, I'm actively moving, you know, moving in a certain direction.
Yeah.
Deep sea diver, I'm moving deeper into something. And at the same time, I have to be aware of the current. So I'm both being guided and also guiding, you know, kind of having a directionality, but also being open to guidance as I move deeper.
Yeah. What I meant is, with by saying what you're really good at that is that, you know, energetically, you pick up on the flow or the current of another person really, really well. And with this metaphor, we can really build upon that wonderful foundation that you have.
Yeah, and I think that there's a certain aspect, too, of the deep sea diver to me that there's a quality of exploration. So it's kind of like, well, what's down here in these depths? I don't know. So what's the kind of an attitude of, you know, what is here? It's kind of an adventure to explore what these unknown depths. And if I don't know, then it brings about a certain quality of, you know, kind of not having as many expectations of the way it should be, and rather be willing to explore what is actually there.
So this is getting really interesting. So it sounds like this deep sea diver of others' interiors resonated with your sense of adventure about meeting your family members where they are. at this point, how did you feel about the depth, and there's no pun intended there, of what the diver metaphor actually offered you?
Yeah, as you could hear in that clip, I resonated with it right away. And, you know, it was skillfully chosen by Susan because on one side of it, there was something that I could relate to, right? I could relate to diving into my own interior, for instance. I mean, I'm very motivated and driven by exploring my own growth and my own, you know, what's up for me. And as an example, by doing this coaching program even, you know, what is up for me and why am I not able to show up with my family the way that I would like to. And that is an aspect of me diving into my own interiors, you know, my own way of seeing how my family, way of being with them. And so that combined with a very kind of somatic aspect that I could relate to in terms of like diving, you know, it feels very palpable to me of, you know, like an active engagement process. And at the same time, there was this bridge of what I can relate to, but also something new that I have yet to explore with my family, and that, okay, well, what does it mean to do that same thing, you know, the diving into the interiors that I do for myself, and how do I then apply that to diving into their interiors? And so there was this great ability for me to, you know, on the one side, to feel, okay, this is what I resonate with, and yet, it feels like it's a new opportunity for me to stretch into as well.
And Susan, what do you listen for in the client's reaction to the second metaphor? I mean, how many of the nuances do you want them to like get right away, or is the work that you do with them from here on out in the second session really going to reveal more of those layers?
Mm-hmm. As you might imagine, David, after experiencing what their current way allows for, but particularly what it shuts down in their topic, clients are quite curious and eager to start playing with an image that offers them hope for success. So in offering a new metaphor for us both to play with, myself and Hui, I'm listening for intrigue. So does this metaphor intrigue Hui? Does it draw him in? And then together, we shape the rest of that metaphor to evoke greater and greater resonance. So the metaphor then becomes the holder for Hui's potential development, his new capacities, his new muscles, his new awareness. So you might say that it serves as a metaphor that holds Hui's waking up and growing up opportunities within his topic. Or another way of saying this is that it helps clients to sense their latent potential in their topic on both visceral and emotional levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I get that. So just a note to the audience before we go on here. It looks like we're going to run a bit long tonight. There's just so much that happens in this offer session that we just didn't want to cheat you on any of it. So we hopefully you can stay with us past the hour, and we will run through all the depth of this, and there's plenty to come, which is just getting interesting. So while the two of you were initially exploring the significance of the deep sea diver, one of the things that doesn't come up right away is Hui's fear of being rejected. And we've heard this theme a couple of times, both in the intake and again tonight. At some point, this occurs to you, Hui, because you asked Susan a question about how the diver metaphor is going to help you with this. So let's listen to the interchange between the two of you in this next pre-recorded clip.
I have a question. I'm sorry, noticing this coming up. So one of the other things that I recalled from our intake was another theme, which was that there's some part of me that is afraid to reveal who I am or even to ask questions of my family and from that answer, see if whether or not they can appreciate me, you know, or understand me or get me.
Yeah.
And so in some ways there's like a bit of there is some fear that I have, probably even more than I'm aware of, about being rejected, right? You know, like, what if they don't get me? What if they don't appreciate me? And so how does that part of it show up with this metaphor of the deep sea diver?
Mm-hmm. What kind of actions or words do you think the deep sea diver might bring to the family to help them start making bridges to you?
Well, I think that the first part of it is diving into their interiors and meeting them where they are in such a way that allows them to appreciate and see who I am in that process and feel that there is already a shared experience and a support just in doing that, you know, and that in and of itself is an intimacy that can be created through that.
Yeah, they know that you care about them and that you're genuine in your curiosity. So sometimes when Don't Worry, Be Happy would show up, it had a way of minimizing experience, not only your own, but others. And so with a deep sea diver, he's coming in, he's really, really compassionate and true. And generally, when people experience that in another person, they lower their guard a bit. Not that they want to meet you entirely in the way that you might want to be met, but it does invite them in. So that first dive, especially if it's a really deep dive, that can be pretty scary. But once the diver's in the water and he's familiar with a certain cave, he can come back up and go down and maybe even explore a little bit further over time once he's used to it. So this brings in the learning process, not just because you're in a coaching process, but actually the learning process within the metaphor itself, getting used to how it feels, this new way.
Yeah, and I guess part of that too then is that's occurring to me is that it's not like that this has happened all at once, so that even though I may be a deep sea diver, how deep I go at each dive or each interaction may depend on the current of the time, and, you know, so meaning that I have to feel into where my family is at, or I'm talking to my mother, you know, I have to be perceptive to where she's at in that moment with what else is happening, and, you know, I may only go a few feet down, you know, or at different times in a different place, I may be able to go miles deep into the interior, and that it's a process over time, and rather than having a certain expectation of how it's going to be every time.
Yeah, or like when you go home for the holidays.
So, Susan, you next explore with Wee how he will check how he's doing when he's home for the holidays and how the two metaphors you've given him to work with, how it actually might be going. So you've mentioned this word checking in the process tonight. What can you tell us about the role of checking for things that is part of the integral coaching process?
Sure. So remember earlier I mentioned that given all of us, we have these ingrained ways of being in the world. We all have ways of seeing, going, and then checking. So ways of going include our actions and words. And then ways of seeing would be things like our implicit beliefs, the underlying values that drive us. And each of us have a preferred set of things we check to confirm that everything's okay in our world, to check how things are going, to check how things turned out. So often we're not aware that we favor certain sources of feedback or data over others. So this coaching process attempts to make our unique biases explicit. So for example, Don't Worry, Be Happy checks to ensure that things feel peaceful and good energetically to Hui. However, it doesn't include his family members' direct feedback or Hui's emotional awareness. On the other hand, the deep sea diver of others' interiors really stretches Hui to check in with his own emotions and to check in with his own moral compass regarding how he wants to be with humans in his life, family, friends, strangers, you know, anyone, really. So it also asks him to directly solicit his family members' experience. So all of those things are new ways of checking for him.
Right, that helps. So, yeah, that was good. I'm going to use that checking process with when I go home for the holidays. So, Susan, then you then proceed into the final theme of the offer session that involves helping we develop new muscles that he'll need if he's going to be successful into relating to his family in new ways. Let's listen to that pre-recorded clip where you introduce this concept to we, and we'll get his response as well.
How do you think this new way of relating to your family would bring you deeper into your family's interior and into your own interior?
assuming we can build all of the muscles that would be necessary to help you do that.
Well, I think that having the attitude and the disposition of approaching interacting with my family as a deep sea diver with, you know, willing to be exploratory and curious and also using my skill and capacities to be willing to move into what's unknown. And even in the midst of that, knowing that there's the fear that goes along with moving into the unknown and a certain sense of risk is actually what makes it adventurous. You know, what makes it an adventure, what makes it exciting. And that would allow me to show up and meet my family in ways that I haven't in the past.
It would also allow you to have the courage and strength to withstand that potential upset that might come both internally and relationally with them as you challenge your family norm, the way that you guys normally connect. The deep sea diver, by very nature, makes waves when he makes contact, right? So there's a very skillful way that the deep sea diver of others' interiors can really relate to his family and fulfill those deep desires of your topic that we talked about.
So, Susan, you continue this muscle development process by contrasting what Don't Worry, Be Happy does and doesn't do for Hui with what the deep sea diver of others' interiors actually offers him. What I found really important, what you said at this point, is that when we're trying to change something in ourselves, from your perspective here, we don't need to get rid of the way that we are currently showing up, but rather we need to evolve it to include some new capacities. We don't need to get rid of everything. We just need to build on it. So I want to listen to this next pre-recorded clip because you really go into this whole notion of building skills.
We don't want to get rid of Don't Worry, Be Happy. Remember, Don't Worry, Be Happy allows for many possibilities. But what it's not offering you is a more diverse way of really diving into the world of your family members, like the deep sea diver has. So Don't Worry, Be Happy, for example, doesn't have the deep sea diver's ability to be with discomfort in disrupting your family's ways. So that's another capacity that we'd want to build. So as a concrete example, something like putting your arms around your mom and just letting her know how much you loved her dinner, or shaking your dad's hand and looking into his eyes more directly.
Yeah, I'm definitely at the point where the possibilities are clear. And, you know, so now I'm starting to think about, well, okay, what does it take for me to be able to do that? Because I can feel how at one part of me knows that, you know, I see a new possibility and I have some new insights and it's exciting. And at the same time, there's also a part of me already, I can feel in my body that it'll still be challenging and there's going to be a very strong pull still.
Mm-hmm.
When things get tough or uncomfortable, to go back to a groove that's more comfortable in what I've, you know, always done, and not wanting that to happen. You know, and
yeah,
of course knowing that it will at times, but wanting to have a different choice around it as well.
Yeah, so just how is it that we're going to build the ability to move out of Don't Worry, Be Happy exclusively and into the deep sea diver?
Yeah, how are we going to do that?
How are we going to do that? Well, I have a practice for you.
So, Susan, I thought that was a really interesting moment right there at the end because, you know, we obviously seems to be buying into this notion of evolving from Don't Worry, Be Happy, Don't Worry, Be Happy, to the deep sea diver. But then he asked that $64,000 question, which I'm sure we can all relate to, is, you know, how am I going to do that? And you respond that you have a practice for him. So in this final segment of the offer session, you give we a practice in addition to the two metaphors. So what is the purpose of offering an initial practice at this point in the integral coaching process?
You know, David, the $64,000 question is what all integral coaches long to hear at this point in the offer conversation. So that question only arises when the client, one, deeply feels the limits of his or her current way of being metaphor, depicted in Hui's case as Don't Worry, Be Happy, and two, when the new way of being metaphor has deeply resonated with the client and he or she longs to find a way to live with that new reality. So the $64,000 question is the best one to ask at this point. Okay? So the first practice is designed to deepen a client's ability to observe his or her current way arising every day. Once the assumptions, triggers, responses, and preferred ways of checking become accessible, clients can then learn more adaptive alternatives, as specified by their custom-designed coaching program in their topic. So otherwise, if their current way remains hidden from awareness, it has a tendency to undermine clients' best intentions. So we get back to, wow, everything is, nothing's changed. How is this happening? My intention's there, but nothing's changing.
Yeah. Well, let's listen to what the first practice actually is, and then I want to get your reaction to how it felt for you at this point.
So your first practice is about getting to know the various ways that "Don't Worry, Be Happy" is present in your life. We're not going to change anything just yet. It is really, really important to get to know all the ways that that strong tendency to go into "Don't Worry, Be Happy" shows up. I bet you can guess why that is.
Yeah, so that I can understand and have greater insight into my way showing up now, which is the foundation for me to then be able to have a new choice about how to show up.
Yeah.
Before I can move forward, though, I need to have a clear picture of where I am.
Yeah. So it's when it becomes visible to you, you can start to shape it a little bit. So what I'd like for you to do is, during the day, I'd like you to tune into those moments when you start to feel yourself just energetically pull out, whether it's lazy withdrawal or just you're just pulling back, that really strong sense that you have of the energetic connection, when does it recede? And I'd like for you to just note what it is that triggered it, and what's the situation. And particularly, I'd like for you to note what's happening inside of you, what's happening in your own interior. So what body sensations and emotions are you experiencing? And then what kind of internal conversations are you having? And I'd like for you to think about it a little bit more deeply and ask, how is "Don't Worry, Be Happy" manifesting right now? And then as best as you can tell in that moment, what does "Don't Worry, Be Happy" offer you and others? Also look at, what is "Don't Worry, Be Happy" actually shutting down for me? What does it not allow for? And also, what is it shutting down for you and the people that you relate to?
Okay, I can do that.
Yeah. And then I'd like for you to review your notes. I'd like for you to just note patterns and themes that emerge regarding this pull to respond with "Don't Worry, Be Happy," particularly when you interact with other people. And I'm curious if that you can dive a little bit underneath those themes and wonder, what do they suggest about what you believe about your ability to bring yourself forward more fully with your family members? And given that, what do these themes reinforce? What stories do they reinforce about your capacity to be fully present with them? And then to just plumb a little bit deeper with that, the interior muscle work that we're doing for you. What are you feeling as you're learning these things about yourself?
Okay, that sounds good.
Okay, and if any judgments come up, again, this is just noticing what is without judgment. So I'd really invite you to be curious, bring that passion and curiosity that you have into the practice itself, and just be gentle. Okay? And then we'll talk next time about what you've learned, and we'll explore it a little bit more deeply. We'll dive in together to do that.
All right.
Right.
Dive in together.
So it sounded like what Susan was suggesting made sense to you. Did it feel to you at that time that this was something that really could help?
Yes, definitely it did. And, you know, I must admit that drawing on my own experience as a coach, one of the things that I recognize is that right during that session with Susan, as we were exploring the metaphor of "Don't Worry, Be Happy" and how that is a way that I'm relating to my topic, it was easy for me to start seeing that in my mind. And, you know, with Susan's help, I could start seeing examples and get an understanding of that. And at the same time, I know that just because I can see it in that moment, you know, in this intimate space, being there with Susan, it's a whole different thing to see it in real time, showing up when I'm interacting with family members, when I have emotional things going on in me, I'm feeling emotional, you know, emotions in my family. And so I recognize that the opportunities for me in terms of starting to build a foundation to change is to actually observe in real time, in the midst of these interactions, how Don't Worry, Be Happy actually arises. And that it's actually going to be something that I don't know yet. It's going to be something that I have to explore by engaging in this practice. And so I was very curious at that point and you know, definitely motivated to work on the practice that Susan created for me.
Mm-hmm. So at this point, the second offer session was completed between the two of you, with both of you promising to come back after a period of reflection and proceed with exploring some additional practices and making whatever adjustments you deem necessary before we heads off for the holidays. So, Susan, what can we look forward to next week as we present the final coaching session with Hui before he actually goes home for the holidays? What is it that you want the two of you to accomplish?
Yeah. So I want to remind everyone, integral coaching is about development. So just noticing in a new way is a developmental move. It's that aha moment. But noticing and not doing the familiar move, or noticing it and trying out an unfamiliar move, is a more nuanced developmental step. So having our aha moment become embedded in our actions and words is integration. And full embodiment of the topic isn't possible in 2 to 3 sessions. So at this point, it's important to ask Hui what his expectations are for himself as he goes home for the holidays to experiment with what he's learned thus far. And also, I want to stress that development began way back in the intake conversation, and it thickened in this offer conversation, and it will become only more robust by the next call. So at this point, the deep sea diver of others' interiors might start showing up, but we really want to be paying attention to how Don't Worry, Be Happy's muscles appear in Hui, because they're his strong, reflexive, the built over years and years muscles, the ones he currently embodies. So first we want to be noticing and intercepting his current way of being with profound compassion. It's so important. Curiosity and compassion. This alone is a huge developmental move. And for what we've seen here tonight, Hui is already making great strides.
We can see that. We can hear that, I should say. And then thanks, Susan, for all of that you've shared with us tonight. I know I understand a lot more about what you go through as the coach when you have a client, as we, on a topic like this. And that was very, very, very useful. And we, there's only one more coaching session before you head out to visit your family. You know, how are you feeling at this point about your chances for success?
Oh, I'm very optimistic. I'm feeling like there's nothing to worry about. I just be happy about it. You know, one of
I
the,
like that. I thought that was that was succinct. That was great. Is there more?
Yes. You know, one of the reasons why I brought up this topic, as I mentioned, is that, you know, I've been recognizing over the last few visits with my family that I actually go in to visit with an intention to show up differently. And yet as I show, you know, as I engage in a family and when I'm there, I recognize, you know, I'm still, things aren't different. You know, things are the same and I'm not sure how to change it. So it feels like, you know, I'm stuck. And after this coaching offer session, I started seeing a new way of approaching it, you know, kind of a new way of thinking about when I go home instead of just thinking, well, I want to show up differently, is the way I've typically, you know, kind of felt about it. Now I have an approach of, oh, I want to go home and dive into the interiors of my family members. I want to go in and have this kind of an adventurous, exploratory attitude. And what is there for me to discover? You know, is there some buried treasure in the depths of my family members that I've known for my whole life that I'm yet unaware of. And so I must admit that at this point in time, I'm not yet quite sure, okay, how am I going to do that? But at least the shift in the perspective has happened, which gives me kind of a new sense of, kind of motivation and inspiration around that.
Well, thank you, Wei. And Susan, you both have given us a lot to reflect on tonight. And where we've left it with this offer, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in the next show, where we really go to the third session, where there you really sort of tie this all together before Wei heads home. And for those of you in the audience, don't forget to download the Integral Coaching Practice for this week. You can go to the Integral Life homepage at www.integrallife.com and click on the Home for the Holidays medallion. You'll find the practice on the show page with everything else, and we think and hope you find it very stimulating. And for those of you vying for the 3 coaching sessions prize, those of you that are entering your stories in the contest, we need you to submit your stories this week, and we're going to announce the 3 semifinalists next week, so you won't want to miss out on that. And here's one last piece of really good news. Integral Life is actually offering a special Home for the Holidays coaching package, and we call it One Taste. It includes 2 telephone or video Skype coaching sessions with a certified integral coach and a personalized coaching program designed just for you or, seeing as how it's the holidays, someone you care about. What a great gift for the holidays. So to find out more, go to www.integrallife.com. Again, click on the Home for the Holidays medallion and follow the links to the special offer. And I will say one more thing about it, though. It's a great deal. You now can have an initial experience of the depth of integral coaching for just $334. And that's a savings of close to $170 off the normal price. So just check it out. So that's it for tonight. I'm David Reardon, and we thank you for joining us. And we look forward to seeing you next week when we get Wei all buttoned up and ready to head home for the holidays. Good night, everyone.
I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan on me. Please have snow and mistletoe and presents on the tree. Christmas Eve will find me where the love light gleams. I'll be home for Christmas if all